here at the Old City Swans.
Welcome back to A Bevy of Bloods, a fan podcast of the Sydney Swans Football Club.
So to all you loyal Swans out there, just can't get enough of the red and the white.
Fluff up your tail feathers and settle in for a potentially biased yarn about all things to do with our beloved Bloods.
G'day there, Cygnets and Swanlings. Welcome back to A Bevy of Bloods. You're joined, as always, by the boys from Sydney. I'm Chris, and this is Noddy.
That's right, you lucky loyal Swans fans. In this episode, we're going to be chatting about the huge win against the Pies. And remember, if you like our stuff, make sure to give us a like or follow. Okay, let's kick things off with a quick game recap.
Quick recap, Noddy, this is a big one. I'll always enjoy ruining Collingwood's day when they're trying to raise a flag. Last Friday night, in front of 79,000 fans at the Collingwood Cricket Ground, our Sydney Swans defeated the Magpies by 33 points with a final score of 10-9, 69, 15-12, 102. Noddy, straight to you for first impressions. What did you see?
Oh, it was another incredible win. It was unbelievable. Very, very, very strong game plan, backed up with huge effort and lots of pressure. It was just amazing feeling, right? Two-way running, excellent defensive effort, mids and forwards putting in the same amount of effort defensively. Biggest ever crowd in a Pies Swans game. So that was bloody cool.
I didn't even know that, actually. I had no idea it was the biggest, but... Yeah, look, I agree with all those points there. Pressure across the ground, massive talking point. We're going to back it up with a bunch of stats throughout the game. Look, in my eyes, it kind of seemed like Foxy's pressure in that forward line was giving us every indication why he is such a good role there. So he was almost best on ground in that first from my eyes. But it's clear now that his kicking for goal needs to be improved. But hey, look, just watch this space. He's only been there for a few weeks. As I said at the beginning, raising the flag by the Pies and kind of ruining their day always has a little bit of extra fun. And from all indications by Swans fans who went to the game, it was a particularly really, really good game. When they mentioned it was 79,000 people when I was watching on the telly, by the time they mentioned that, it looked like there was about 25,000 left. So it just goes to show how the Pies fans felt that the game was going at that point. But hey, we're not here to dig the heels in or whatever. What's that old saying? We're not to
kick them when they're down.
Dig
the heels in. Yeah. I'm happy to go there, mate, if you want to. Look, we dominated early. Look, this is the thing, right? We dominated early but couldn't convert. But then, you know, pulling it together, sorting out our pressure, amazingly solid defense, right? McCartan, Melican, Blakey. Just really, really worked. Precise kicking as we can do. This allowed us to pull away in the second, third, and then annoyingly took our foot off the pedal in the fourth, and they got those three goals towards the end in junk time. It should have been, I think it was like 51 points with 10 minutes to go. So, look, other than that, you know, I mean, what'd you make?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a pretty dominant display from the beginning, right? Like we're watching it at Jason's house, and there was a few of us there, and we're all getting into the game. I'm like, this is scary. We are right on fire. And wasn't sure whether it was just our pressure that was just so damn good, as well as them kind of being off. But as the kind of game went on, as that first quarter kind of went on, it did show that the Pies were quite sharp and they were able to bounce it back really quickly. But despite all the dominance, despite all these shots at goal that we potentially had inside 50s, they were up by one by the first break. So, but it was that second quarter that really did the game, really got us a run for us. So that was like, it kicked off with the goal of Papley, Heaney got a behind, then two goals by Logan, and then followed by Chad. So we put on a lot of scoreboard pressure in that second quarter to really, really make it up. And junk time in the second quarter kind of pulled them back a bit, and junk time in the fourth quarter, as you just mentioned earlier, also brought them back a little bit. But nonetheless, a really, really great display for that first half, and then basically throughout the game, apart from 15 minutes overall in the whole game time. What about you? What did you see?
Oh, just really good work by the forwards, which you've already touched on. But like in particular, Logan, I think, who was able to find room off his opponent and then made him count. Obviously, he kicked four, and we'll go over that. Hard running, wasn't really taking the marks that Amati was. He looked like he had glue on his hands, but obviously this is his what everyone's calling his breakout year. He's out of the shadow of Buddy. And he's already looking like he's stepping up. So to find space off, away from some of the game's best defenders and then score four, no matter how he did it, right, is extremely pleasing. Maybe he's getting some tips from the old Budster about hard running, but or some of his earlier game style. But with being able to do this, get behind your player and also lead up, as we know he can, he's obviously keeping his opponent on his toes. I think it was a great game by Logan.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you, mate. I think his hard running really got into space to get some of those goals, right? So what were your key stats? Did you see anything in the stat line that really told the picture?
Look, I think it's the tackles, right? It's plus 21 by the end of the game. I think that's it, right? So the pressure that we applied, I think we had 27 forward half intercepts, right, and scored 47 points. That's just forward half. And then 78 points from all intercepts, wherever they occurred on the field. So the pressure and then precise kicking and then converting, when we did, largely in the second and the third, but just it's all off the back of our pressure. It was just unbelievable. And Rowie, we'll talk about him, but he led the way.
So just to reiterate your point there, so three quarters of our score line was based on the back of intercepts throughout the game.
Is that a question? Of our overall score. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's wild.
I know. It's pretty crazy.
I didn't see that stat line. Yeah.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I dare say that's a fair way higher than what the average would have been last year. Obviously, it's too early to know how teams are going to play out in that area. But we saw it on the field, right? We're just so well set up, and we're picking everything off and tackling with just like aggression. It was just awesome, and that was it, right? That was where we won the game. So, it was really, really, really good to see.
Mate, my stat line, I'm going to touch on what you mentioned earlier about how good Logan was. Like, we had 10-plus marks inside 50. Mm-hmm. Now, our inside 50 has always, or the last couple of years, I'd say in particular, has been a little bit wanting, where we've kind of been very Bud-centric, and for good reason. The man deserves to get the ball when he's asking for it. Mm-hmm. But for this time around, it felt like we had a lot more opportunity, a lot more movement of the ball laterally around the ground, and that formulated, as you said before, about how Logan was able to get behind his man and just be sitting there by himself inside the goal square twice for an easy goal in. So it was hard work by the forwards to get all that space in, and it's actually been something that the general community has been mentioning about the Pies game the last couple of weeks, in that they've given up a lot of slack to their opponents. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether this is something that the forwards coaches at the Swans have noted and been like, right, Logan, get on your horse, because these guys aren't going to follow you, or at least they're going to give you that 5 meter space and that's all you need, right? You're a good marker. So I think it was particularly good to see how that transformed itself straight onto scoreline pressure, and to see Logan on the other side of that says a lot about him and about his skills. And I'm reiterating some of the things you said earlier, but just kind of that hard running superstar forward that he can be. It's a skill set that a young player is not necessarily going to pick up easily, but for him to be putting in that work in such a young age, and working super hard to get around the ground, I think it's saying so much about him and his head and what he wants to do with his career going forward. So I'm really, really excited to see where this ends up in the next few weeks, whether he kind of carries it on.
I mean, if you kick four goals against the Eagles, that's one thing, right? But then if you kick four goals against the reigning premiers, regardless of how you get them, I mean, what a confidence booster for him at the beginning of the season. So
that's right. Yeah, with Darcy Moore sitting there right behind him, right? One of the best that does it. So, 100%. Yeah. Mate, big plays, missed opportunities. Like the game was had plenty of really wicked things. We're going to try to condense it to a couple. What did you see out there?
Oh, Roey's tackle on Dugowie was fucking unbelievable.
Huge.
Like, yeah. I mean, also, how was that not holding?
I was clearly holding.
Oh my God.
Clearly holding.
I mean, he tackled him a couple of times that, and I thought that, you know, that was the clearest one of that. I mean, that was holding the ball every day of the week.
Yeah.
There are a few others that you could probably almost have gone, but it's just his work and the way he hits guys. Like, he's not an overly massive guy. Was he 186 centimeters, about, you know, mid 80s. So he's not huge in the kilograms, sorry, but he just hits with such ferocity. Like, I don't know, maybe he has one-on-one sessions with Isaac Heaney and his
rugby league
background. Yeah,
Kieran
yeah.
Jack rocking up every now and then, showing him how to tackle. Yeah,
that's right, yeah. But, look, obviously he was sitting on him at stoppages. He had a bit of a run with roll. Dugowie only got three clearances for the game, right? And we know how damaging he can be. I mean, he's X-factor game winner. And the fact that Roe is just like blanketing him, smashing him, just nullifying him was just so, so awesome. I would be remiss if I don't mention this moment very quickly here, mate. Obviously, the thing that started us, we spoke on our early dominance but not able to convert, but Chad Warner's individual brilliance to pick the pocket of Steel Side Bottom, a class player of his own right, and then go on to kick the goal in which he did under pressure from two defenders coming at him. And it, obviously that was our first, and that helped us. That was just like, that's the kind of thing that Brownlow medal winners do. Was just highlights reel. Chad Warner, like the Chad. Unbelievable.
The Chad. Unbelievable. That was 100% the Chad. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know, mate. How about you?
I'm going to take a slightly different approach to this. I'm going to say, rather than a big play that's happened, I would say a smart move that we made from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
Gordon went from 50-something percent last week in centre bounce attendance down to 32%. Mm. Now, some people are going to be saying, well, how can we not use him more? And I think, and I mentioned this last year as well, I think using him and his amazing skill sets to get around the ground and that insanely powerful and accurate kick that he has going inside 50 is such a weapon that it's ridiculous for have him running around trying to tackle the big boys. So to see him slightly on the outside this week and seeing him being able to apply his skill to the game, I kind of felt that was much more his natural role. And I felt that he had a lot more impact on the game as a result of it. Not that he had a bad game last week, he had a great game last week. But this week it felt like there was direct line between was every touch that he had and the opportunity to go forward and also, you know, get some good possession and get everything going forward and streaming forward. So that for me was a bit of a big play, but more from a coaching perspective than anything else.
Mm. Obviously, missed opportunity was the Papley kick over to Lloydie tripping over him. I mean, that was just like, I was so stressed at that point. I was like, oh my, because we got that one and we give ourselves a bit of a buffer, but then to miss it in the way, and then we're like, what the bloody hell's Lloydie doing in the forward line?
That's nightmare material right there. Yeah, right? That's just like the ball's within an inch of your foot and you can't get your kick on. Like, that was like the last time, I remember you fired off last time about the wasp nest on the on the goalpost.
Yeah.
So last time that Lloydie had a crack at goal, it hit the padding, or no, not even, sorry, it didn't hit the padding. Hit some Velcro that was hanging off the padding.
Wasn't it the gather round?
Yes, I think so.
Like insignia or whatever it was.
Normally
not there, right?
And then it hit that. And so this time around, they're just like, nah, Lloydie, you touch some Velcro, you're not allowed to have a goal. And there's Lloydie by himself in the goal square, ball bouncing around in front of him, him just absolutely panicking. Like, the guy is the coolest head ever, and he was just losing his shit. And I don't blame him. I'd be doing worse than him.
Pap could have been a little bit kinder to him in his delivery. But, the point is that this is 2 weeks in a row where he's actually pushed that far forward, right? We're picking this up in the group. He's clearly got a different role. Obviously, Robbo's coming in the back, Fox is forward. But then that just gives Lloyd to sort of roam up and down the wing, mostly defensive, but he does push far forward, kind of like McInerney can. Yeah, but yeah, but anyway, that was just one clear missed opportunity, obviously.
It was.
Apart from all the missed set shots in the first quarter. I mean, we could have been like six goals up in the first quarter, right?
Yeah, we should have done six or eight or so by halftime, I'd say. Yeah. Yeah, so. There were some sweaty moments there. Even when you were just talking about that Lloyd moment, I still started getting sweaty right now as I'm sitting in my room. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, mate. Well, next up, obviously the Bob Medal. In our version of the Bob Skilton Medal, we give out 3-2-1 points for best on ground each game. This week, Rowey gets one, Warner gets two, and Heaney gets three. All right, let's start with the Heat.
The Heat, Heaney. All right. 29 disposals at 76% efficiency. Right then and there, I want to just put a pause there. I want everyone just to write that down. So 29 disposals at 76% efficiency. That's insane given he was playing full inside. Granted, Pendlebury was hitting way over that, but Pendlebury is just an absolute freak and has been doing that for a long, long time. But just to give you some context about that, that was a higher efficiency than Josh and Nick Dacos, Goulden and Sidebottom. And Heaney was playing hard inside the whole time, running both ways, defending, like going hard in the inside or contested possession. Like he was playing such a great game. 13 contested possessions, best on the Swans, four tackles, six inside 50s, which was second on ground. So Heaney had a game of the ages, dare say, 3 points in the Brownlow. And we're going to talk about Warner in a second. I'll pass it to you for Warner. But like Warner was high up there. And would you imagine it being an incredible game? And Heaney had that extra level up. And I would just say that Heaney's, the extra bit that Heaney did on top of just like what Warner was, had an incredible game, but what Heaney did extra watching him on the field was just that two-way defensive effort as well. He's just that extra bit, a bit polished, extra bit knowledgeable, a bit more mature on how to stand, where to go to, how to help defend. He was just that extra guy, and he seemed to be everywhere. It was dangerous. Heaney was there waiting to go. So 3 points for Heaney, mate. I'll pass it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a tough one because Chad had a blinder as well. But like Heaney kicked 2-2, right? So if he'd kicked four goals, it makes it a bit easier because Chad was as impactful, right, and as dangerous. I mean, these two guys, I think Steve-O, it was Jules saying throughout like, oh, Heaney's playing every single, he's everywhere on the field. It's like there's 18 Heaneys out there at one point because he's just running everywhere. But Chad, that 1-2 combo, and Steve-O said this, the 1-2 combo of Heaney and Warner, are just, it's just looking very, very nice because they're both elusive, they're both strong, but they're just seeing it and reading it really, really well. And they are a big reason from this early showing right from us. So 27 disposals from Chad, 11 contested possessions, 7 clearances, which was second best on ground, 11 score involvements, which is best on ground, plus 3 goals. Thank you very much. He's impossible to tackle, right? The way he reads the play defensively. I mean, we already spoke about that first goal, but he did that multiple times in the game where he's reading the play and just stealing the pressure that he's putting on, almost one percenters, but he sort of turns it into an offensive situation. So it's just he's so dangerous, and when he has the ball in his hands, anything can happen. And so that just is, it just makes him a very special player. And he had some pretty cool boots on, didn't he? I think he had the TNs. I think probably only Chad Warner could pull that off. Maybe.
Can you give me some context around those boots? Is it a brand?
Nike, they're the Nike, they're kind of like the, I don't know if you want to call them Esche type. You know those Nike Air type? They had like kind of tiger color with the black stripes.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw that.
I'd never actually seen them before. So it might be a thing, that the players are doing these days, the kids are doing, but they're definitely like a sneaker in the, streetwear culture thing. Right, but then to see them on Chad's feet during a game, obviously with studs on the bottom, was just like, it was pretty dope. So
right, okay, yeah, I get it. I understand the context now. So right, okay. Gone are the days of just having a black pair of boots with like a white logo or whatever that provider is. Like all the kids are wearing wicked boots everywhere.
Not unless you're Melly, right? Melly can. Wow. Who can? Melly can. How good was Melly?
Melly was grand. Yeah. Melly was really, really good. Anyway. Let's get into the back lines right after this because I think they're worth a mention. All right. Row bottom got 1 point. And it's pretty fun to kind of suggest that 1, 2, 3. So Heaney, Warner, and Row bottom all with the points. Look, His tackle, 13 tackles for Roey. He's just huge. Picked up where he left from last year. And
unbelievable.
He's bigger now, right? His size is bigger. He looks like he is,
but I don't know. Do you know they've taken the kilogram off the AFL app? They don't put kilograms on the for the players anymore. They did that with the AFLW. I think this season.
Last season. Yeah.
But they're doing it for the men as well. So they're only listing their height at the moment. So, I don't know where he is at exactly. But, yeah, he seems stronger, right?
He does. He looks stronger. He definitely looks more buff. He looks leaner and more buff at the same time. I mean, not saying last year he had puppy fat at all. Like the guy was pretty lean, but he looked young, you know, he didn't. But now he looks like a mean AFL player. And he was just everywhere. I think Polly mentioned during the game, like said that I think Roey's our best on ground in that first quarter, just the amount of pressure that he was applying. The stat line may not necessarily show it, but definitely with your eyes, he was really getting all that pressure on. He's part of the reason why Chatty was able to, you know, force a turnover, why we had a couple of other turnovers, why we were able to get the ball on the ground and get going, why he slammed a couple of tackles down, why he was making a lot of the players on the other side of the Pies so nervous because there was so much going on with pressure. Roey was a big part of that and has been. It's one of those things about Roey too that he's and this is we're going to, I'm going to go through the stats just very quickly, but some of the commentary around him has just been about his disposal efficiency. And you and me have always backed him up and said, look, it's the kind of role he plays. So he has like half a second to react to anything before he has to get rid of the ball. And yeah, sure, his disposal efficiency may not be the best and it's only going to get better. But let's just use this week as an example. He had 88% disposal efficiency and he averages at 67.
Yeah, that's huge.
Huge difference. And let's look at the other lines as well. Chatty averages at 66, hits 70, so just a touch over his average. Mm-hmm. And Heaney normally hits 69% efficiency. He was at 76 this week. So plus 7 for Heaney, plus 4 for Chad, and quickly plus 21 for Roey percentage. Huge differences in the amount of efficiency. And I guess when the other team is freaking out and behind the eight ball, you've got a little bit more time to go with. So yeah, Roey with the 1 point there, mate.
I just had a look at that. So he had 9 of his 13 tackles in the first half. So he 5 in first, 4 in second, and then obviously just that pressure, that platform of pressure. He had such a good game, didn't he? I mean, if he'd kicked, I mean, what did he end up kicking? Was he kicked 1-1 or something?
Kicked 1-1, I think, yeah.
All these three players, like obviously, you know, you got to give 3-2-1, but the three of them together just combined. I wanted to give them all three, really, is what I'm trying to say here.
We'd be
breaking our own rules. So obviously,
the rules that we made up. Yeah.
Yeah. We basically, you know, took the tried and tested 3-2-1, and that's, we've got to roll with it. That's it, mate. All right. Look, so what does that result mean for us at this point in the season?
Well, before you get into that,
Defenders.
We said we're going to quickly have a chat about defenders.
Yeah, definitely. So Melly just looked. I thought he was our best player in the first quarter. He had that one kick to Jordan that got intercepted, and then I think they kicked a goal from there. So obviously that was just a bit unfortunate, I think, in communication. But 4 marks, 3 contested possessions, and 5 disposals for Melican. A lot of Swans fans were calling for Hamling to have first key defence positioning, but I think he's just been playing so well. Obviously, you know, when he started, he showed a lot of potential back in the day, and then obviously has been hit with a lot of injuries. But he looks like he's had a pretty good preseason, and he's combining really well with McCartan, so much so that, like, you know, they almost share that sort of. They're combining really well, I think, is the it's way too soon to say May Lever, but that kind of innate sense of knowing where your other, where the partner is, so who to, like, when to intercept, when to hold back, it's just looking really well, looking really good, sorry. So but then when was it? It was in the second quarter. McCartan took 3 marks, Blakey took 3 marks, Melican took 1. So it was this thing we were talking about, like intercepting the ball, amazing, really well-structured defense, and then executing, and then obviously getting it back in off the back of that. But yeah, those three guys as talls, I don't know, mate. It was pretty good. Did you?
No, it
was
lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, you nailed it. I think. But and the three names you mentioned there, Melican, McCart, and Blakey, so different players, but all play tour, but play a different style of tour. Yeah, I think we're in a pretty special place to have them. Mm. I mean, we still Rampy's still running around right out there, but you kind of forget about Rampy. And I think that's kind of a good. I mean, with all backmen, if you don't mention them, then that's kind of a good day. But I mean, we could also because they had such a good day.
At the same time, you know, obviously Collingwood have got a whole fleet of dangerous small forwards, and they were largely, you know, ineffective, right? I mean, I think Bobby Hill kicked maybe one in the first quarter, maybe had a couple, but like, you know, so we're glossing over the fact that, you know, our role players of Cunningham, Rampy and Roberts, right, are doing the job. But it's, I mean, just, it was just a very, very good team effort defensively to then set us up our amazing precise kicking going in, and then obviously taking opportunities finally in the second and third. But so back to what it means for us. So what does the result mean for us, mate?
Okay, so that puts us in second place with the two wins, just behind GWS on percentage. Now, just keep in mind, half of the league has not played their second game. So that's just the position. But nonetheless, 2-for-2 against the D's and the Pies, two very good sides, and everyone predicted they're going to be in top four for this year. So we're in a pretty good place there. Look, as the league gets on, a few more weeks kind of play, as we get to that first bye round, I think it gives us a better indication where we're up to. And yeah, I mean, I'll pass it over to you about the next game. What's going on?
Oh, look, so we would say, we'll say the same teams that we've got coming up for the next, until we have our first bye, right? So obviously we've got Bombers at home, Richmond away, and then West Coast in Adelaide for Gather Round. So what we said last week in the episode, in the podcast, is if we can get one of these two games against these top four sides, that'll set us up brilliantly, right, for the next stretch of games. Because you look at it chunk at a time, right? I think that they would be focusing on these first five games and then reset, right? And so to go 2-0 against, you know, two very, very good, I mean, reigning premiers and a team that's been in the top four for the past 3 years and premiers themselves a couple of years ago. So 2-0 is just, you can't start better, right? I mean, you're 100% right. So, but Essendon have only played Hawthorn, but beat them fairly well. Richmond have, you know, been a bit of a mixed bag, got flogged by the Suns, and then only probably should have beaten the Blues. But then the Eagles, yeah, we don't know where they're at. Swans and Eagles are always, it's a game that you gotta watch because of the historical rivalry. But yeah, you would say that we're very well positioned to continue if we can keep this game plan, execution, and effort to go, you know, go well. Like if we can then get one or two from the next three, then already, you know, we've really helped ourselves to push for that, whatever it is, the 13, was it six, maybe 15
magical,
or 15.
Magical number.
Yeah, 15 or 16 wins to you know, really go for top four. So as you said, it's too early. You know, this section will make more sense as we get deeper into the season, because we'll be looking at all the, you know, the different ramifications of other teams winning and losing around us, and obviously percentage and for and against and all that stuff. So it's a bit early, but it's pleasing, right? And I guess the other thing is the two New South Wales teams on top, probably ruffling some feathers at Docklands.
So you've already got Eddie trying to bounce back the idea of having a Sydney grand final. It's just like, buddy, you're jumping at shadows here. Who's asking for this? You know, like the guy is freaking out. Anyway, we all love to make that guy nervous. So,
was it Andrew Ireland from the Swans? Saying that at some point,
Pridham,
you know,
I'm not sure. Yeah,
Pridham was it? Yeah. So, I mean, whoever, you know, whoever. I mean, raised a good point, right? I think even Horse said, you know, if that grand final last year had been in Brisbane, then, you know, who knows what could have happened, rather than being at the Collingwood Cricket Ground.
Mate, we are running in for time, but like one last thing, some big news in the AFL world. I'll pass it over to you.
Team Tasmania, Tasmania
team
Devils.
Tassie. Yeah.
So, I mean, I love it. I think it's great. Just in general, they've obviously, you know, announced the name, the logo, the Guernsey. What are your thoughts on that initially, mate?
Look, I love it. One quick thing I just want to kind of mention. I think in last year sometime when it all started going down, I did like was joking around about like kangaroos heading down the Launceston and being the new Tassie team, get them out of Melbourne. Mm. And that comes from a bit of hatred of them booing Goodsy on his last game. So there's a bit of a background behind that. But I had a couple of Tassie people reach out to me and go like, that's actually kind of a little bit offensive because we deserve our own team. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And I totally understand it. So the seed and back it up, and I think they've hit over 1,000 foundation members already.
Isn't it more? Isn't it? I thought it was 100,000.
It could be more now. I checked it this morning, so probably 120,000 with myself on my way to get a foundation membership as well. Mm. But yeah, so I think it's grand. The only thing I will say, and I'm just going to echo what Polly, you know, number one Super Swans fan, said as well. She's also in graphic design, and she said having a jersey the color of grass is probably a bad idea. She pointed out, and then as soon as she said that, I'm like, you're right. That's not the greatest idea. So let's see where they end up with the jersey, but I think the jersey's kind of made up for now, and then they're going to work it out from here. But
so yeah. I heard a couple of different things. So the counter to that is that it's and I said that. I was like, isn't that the Guernsey that all the state teams that everyone state wears already? Yeah. And then so it's come out to say, like, that's the original Guernsey that they've worn for like 100 years. So there's like a history traditional element to it. So, I mean, you can't argue with that, right?
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
Myrtle green, primrose and something gold. It's something like, I've forgotten them, but that's the palette, right? But yeah, I think Polly's right. Like, it's going to be a bit hard to see. So I thought maybe they could tweak the green, but if there's, you know, if that's what the Tasmanians want, then, you know, who are we to argue, you know, like.
Yeah, I think they'll still end up being a bit more aqua in the end, but anyway, this is all.
Aqua, look out,
more, a little bit more aqua, because if you look at the logo, it's a bit more aqua and kind of red in colouring and less, more so than that more grassy green. It's going to be a problem when it comes to TV. Like, you're going to have to do something about it. It's bad enough that, you know, Collingwood and Geelong play each other in effectively the same jersey. Mm. And that also does people's heads in as well. If they're watching games and don't watch a lot of games, it's kind of tricky to see as well.
Well, the logo I thought was – so it's the same base color as the Guernsey, right? It's that myrtle green. But I thought maybe they could have put, like, different colors around the outside of it to make it pop a bit more, and I'm sure they will. Mm. Yeah, I also heard that someone said this is their traditional Guernsey or something.
Oh, and so cool. There's going to be other – I love that, yeah.
They might have they'll release the other versions, and obviously there's the away strip, but then there'll be a variety of Guernseys that come out. So, look, I think it's awesome. Like, I've already said they're my second team. Yeah, so I'm happy to get behind them. And the whole stadium thing, as we've spoken about that at length on this potty already last year, and won't be the last time. I don't know, there's pros and cons obviously, but yeah, I mean, first and foremost, awesome that the Warner Brothers thing got cleared.
Yeah, so the inside word was that Warner Brothers, when they had the meeting, they'd be like, you can't use our name. Then they were jumped on and be like, hang on, but it's an actual animal. They were like, it is. And Warner Brothers had no idea that the Tasmanian Devil was an actual animal. They never had the rights to it.
Oh, God.
So it's just dumb. Anyway, what do you expect, Americans? Right?
Yeah.
You're right, mate. 120,000 people as of 7 hours ago in the foundation membership and growing, no doubt. So huge, huge work. And well done, Tassie. We hope to be right behind you.
Obviously, just going back to your point, the Hawks were based in Launceston and the Roos in Hobart. Yeah. But then, to choose one area over the other and pull one team potentially down, but the Hawks have been too successful too recently. Mm. So, yeah, it only made sense to go with their own team. But just the caveat of the stadium thing sort of a bit soured it. So, but, I mean, I think it'll happen. I think the AFL should put more money into it. But anyway, that's my opinion than the 15 they've pledged. But anyway, let's see what happens.
As Midnight Oil said, reeks of politics, but we'll get there in the end, I guess, but we'll get there.
Exactly, Matt. I wanted to add one thing here, and this is just looking at the fairly ordinary start by the reigning premiers and also the runners-up, right? So firstly, no reigning premier this century has gone on to win again after a 0-2 start, 0-2 start. And it's the first time ever that both the premiers and the runners-up have been 0-2.
So now, my question to you quickly would be, is this saying something about those teams, or does that say something more about the league that we're in this modern time?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. I mean, I mean, the fact that they're both going 0-2, like it's the first time ever, right? Mm. So, I mean, you've got two teams that play the grand final each year, and then in the first 2 weeks of the competition, one of those teams has got to win at least once, right? So the fact that both have gone 0-2, it's the first time ever, I think that's pretty interesting little, you know, it's a quirky little stat. I'm not, you know, obviously if they go on to win every game from here on in, they'll be in the mix again. But, yeah, it's just interesting. It's interesting. I don't know.
I kind of look at it like from a statistical thing, like it's a bit of a weird animal because it's the statistics are kind of blown because they've had this special, you know, opening round thing where they've basically found like a good team to kind of head out there and make a contest of it. So both teams have had to kind of travel for their first game, or Brisbane didn't, but you know, I mean, like they've had to play some competitive teams in the first 2 weeks just because of the nature of the way the draw kind of went. So it's kind of a bit, I feel a little bit skewed with the reason with this opening round malarkey. But at the same time, this century is only 23 years old anyway up until now. Let's see what happens.
I mean, Brisbane lost by a point.
Hang on, it also includes 2000, so 24, yeah, 24.
Brisbane lost by a point to the Blues, but then gave up a, 46-point lead, right? So I think Kitty Coleman going down, I mean, this is not a Brisbane Lions massive, podcast, but that was, it seemed telling to me. And then obviously Freo in their first showing at home, they've got a lot to prove after last year as well. So it is too hard to know, but what it is it's a stat now. It's a stat that it will be, it's written down, you can't change. It's the first time ever that both premiers and runners-up have gone 0-2.
Well, let's hope it sticks that way, right?
Yeah, well, certainly for at least the Pies anyway.
All right. Well, that does bring us to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening all the way through. If you have made it this far, it means we might have done something good. So please go find us and give us a like or follow us on any of your favorite social medias.
Otherwise, make sure to keep an eye out for more releases during the week, including weekly teams announcement, as well as a bunch of stuff on game day itself.
Yep, and we look forward to whenever you can join us. But for next time, until then, up the Bloods and can you swanies?
Let's go.